Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά.
Mr. Christofis, first of all, congratulations for the AM you have received this year in the Queen's Birthday Honours to distinguished Australians.
You were
awarded this AM for the performing arts, particularly to dance, your contribution to the performing arts, particularly to dance. So let's start by the usual question among Greeks about where do you come from? Which part of Greece do you come from? And were you born in Australia or were you born overseas and then you migrated to Australia?
Well, I was born in Australia, in Brisbane. And it's funny you should ask a question about Greece because neither of my parents lived in Greece. My father was born in a tiny village in the mountains in Cyprus, in a village called Dozo. And at the age of 11, he was taken by a relative to Egypt, to the town of Ismailia, adjunct to the Suez Canal. And instead of being taken away to be educated, he was dumped in a bakery. And he grew up in the bakery for a few years until a lady who was visiting the town where he was delivering bread told him he should come and work for her in her hotel in Port Said, which he did. And from there, he came to Australia in 1916. My mother, on the other hand, was born in Ismailia to parents from the Greek island of Kassel in the Dodecanese. So there's a big gap between my parents' ages. I think like nearly 17 years between them. So I grew up with this Greek Cypriot double barreled kind of history. And my father made sure as a Cypriot that he was supportive of other Cypriots who came to Australia and was one of the founding members of the Cypriot Brotherhood in Brisbane.
Did you mention before that your father came to Australia in 1916?
That's right. That's right. He was very adventurous, as many people have been, just to get up and go with hardly any money in their pocket. But he was told by this old man who was a widower, I believe, who lived in the hotel where he worked, and he said to my father, "You should get out of here. Egypt is a mess. It's falling apart. This war is causing so much trouble. And Europe is broken. Nothing here for you young people. Go to America. Go to Australia. Go somewhere else." And so he went on a gamble, really, and landed in Sydney, where he stayed for about three or four years before he went to Brisbane and established his own business after working for a bunch of different Greek and Cypriot people in Sydney.
So did he establish bakeries?
No, he worked basically in, he opened cafes, the American-style cafes with soda bars and beautiful wooden furnishings and leather seating and all that stuff. And he did three of those, and then he got sick of it working from 6 in the morning till midnight, and then he opened a large grocery store, which he ran basically by himself most of the time. And he retired at the age of 72.
So were you born in Brisbane?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All my siblings, we were all born in Brisbane.
And do you live in Brisbane now, or you have moved?
No, I've been living in Melbourne since 1981. And my partner, Neil, who was working in Brisbane as an Anglican priest, he and I met, ironically, at a Christmas party and the following year at an Easter party with a bunch of Anglican friends of mine. And we became an item and we lived together in Brisbane for some time and then we moved to Melbourne.
Was your mother born in Australia or overseas as well?
She was born in Egypt.
In Egypt, okay.
And my grandfather and his brothers all left Egypt, all left Kassel because of the changes going on in the world. And the Turks, during the big revolution of the 19th century, basically burnt everything they could on the island. And so from being once a very, very wealthy place, it was a very poor place. And they decided the Suez Canal Company was growing rapidly with the building of the canal. So they went to Egypt, as many Greeks did, and worked there. And so my mother was born there.
Mm-hmm. How did you develop your love for dance? Did it start with the Greek dancing or not?
Yeah, well, inevitably in our house, because my mother loved songs and Greek dance music. So, and we had a piano, and my elder sister would play. But we had this pile of records, huge piles of records. My mother would buy, you know, 20, 30 at a time. When they arrived in Australia, we'd go into the record houses where they had a big salon where you could sit behind glass doors, and they would play whatever records you wanted. And then my mother would ask for particular ones, and they'd be delivered to our house. We would play them all the time. But she would dance and sing by herself. You know, she'd be washing up after breakfast when I was very, very little. And she would put Greek records on the player where you could stack 4 or 5 discs at once. And so we might go from Rebetika to more dance music, and she used to play the Egyptian singer Umm Kulthum, who, in that terribly heavy, dark Rebetiko style that the Arabs have. And I must admit, at the age of 2 or 3, it used to make me cry, and I'd leave the house and just go outside because I couldn't stand it. But she would just dance around the house with her apron on and the tea towel over her shoulder. And she would do that at cocktail parties. Now, my parents had these huge parties, you know, 100 people. And we would prepare the house for the party. And then Mum would be in a lovely evening dress with an apron over the top and the tea towel over her shoulder. And she'd go in and grab somebody and start dancing in the middle of the party. And then we had one of the kids in my neighbourhood was a ballet student, and we used to go and see her. And I think probably I was 4 or 5 when I first saw a dance performance. And I was hooked from then on. But I didn't start studying ballet until I was 14. We hid it from my father. We weren't quite sure how he'd cope with that. But he eventually did accept it, and he came to see me performing once I joined the Queensland Ballet Company when I was about 19. And I danced with that company for 3 or 4 seasons. I can't remember exactly now how many we did. But we had very little money. And we all, there were 6 dancers who were paid and a director. But the rest of us had full-time jobs. And we performed at night and rehearsed at night and studied and spent our weekends rehearsing. And I loved it. It was great fun. I wasn't very good, I have to say. I was more of an acting dancer than a technician.
How did your family and the wider social Greek circle community react to the fact that a young boy back then wanted to be a ballet dancer?
Well, nobody ever said anything to us, and nobody ever said anything to me. I certainly didn't let my school friends know.
You didn't?
The other thing, I was much more known because I was from childhood. I was in the church. I was I think I was about 7 or 8 when I first became an acolyte in the sanctuary, and used to do the Sunday morning liturgies occasionally, and then became quite regular. And also I sang in the church choir as a boy and kept my soprano voice until I was in my 20s, which was very surprising for me. I could sing baritone, but I could also sing at the top. Mm-hmm. And so particularly on Good Friday, with the great procession and the all the
epitaphio
and all the songs that go, all the hymns that go with all of that. So I was able to sing in the church choir. So I was known as both as a singer, but I was also known as somebody who was quite religious. And my parents both loved the theatre. My father used to produce plays for the Greek community. And my mother sometimes acted in those. And I acted in a couple of plays with the Greek community, but that didn't work very well. Television had taken everything over by this stage. So those things sort of disappeared, really, in Brisbane.
Which period are we talking about now? Is this the 50s?
Well, I was born
50s?
In 48. So I was in the 50s and the 60s.
Okay.
So, and I graduated from high school in 65.
Okay.
And it was after that that I joined the Queensland Ballet as a student and then as a dancer.
But your dancing career was short-lived from what you said before.
Yeah, I was not technically strong. I started too late.
Yeah.
I should have started when I was about 10 or 11, but I was 14. Mm. I had asthma as a child, and that didn't help me. I was a pudgy teenager at primary, at high school, you know, when I first started. But by the time I started ballet and got taller, I was suddenly a very skinny person. And there's a lot of lifting in ballet, and I knew with my asthma it was going to be a problem. So after appearing in my last big show, which was a ballet called Oedipus Rex, based on myth, with music by Stravinsky, and I played the role of Tiresias, the prophet who goes to tell the king that his lover, his wife, is his mother, and the cycle of that story mm-hmm. collapses in front of us, so to speak. So it was a mime role. And I did some other things before that. I did several comedy pieces, but I danced in the quarter ballet regularly in very big work.
You mentioned
and I really
that you
enjoyed
were...
it. I was very committed to it, and I became very intellectual about it. And I think it was studying by speaking with the director and senior dancers in the company, learning from them what was the foundation for my becoming a critic later on.
You mentioned before that you were singing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try a career in singing, or you concentrated on dance?
I've often wondered whether I should have done that, because I think I would have been a better singer than I was a ballet dancer. But times were difficult. The 1960s had several financial crises, and the jobs were never permanent for people doing commercial theatre. So, and having been unsuccessful, I didn't want to fail again. It took me a long time to work out what I wanted to do after that. But I had part-time jobs. I worked in retail. I worked in interior decorating. I worked in with my father in his shop. I did all sorts of different things over a period of time.
When did you become a dance critic?
Well, that happened in 1981. I had become, before that, I became a kindergarten teacher. My sister was a childcare worker and a kindergarten teacher by training. And she had run a very large nursery in the CBD of Brisbane. And after work, I worked for the Meyer Company for a while. And I used to go there and wait for her to finish work, and we'd go home together. And one of her staff said to her one day, "You know, you're very good with children. You should be doing kindergarten college work. You should be going to study." And my older sister, Julie, she had three children very close together. So I grew up with babies and was very comfortable with babies. So that's the background. But in the 1970s, the Whitlam government brought up this whole new project of funding for early childhood education and care, for childcare centres, for the development of new kindergarten programs. And so I was able to go, instead of having to pay university fees, I got a Commonwealth scholarship, graduated as a kindergarten teacher, the first male kindergarten teacher in Queensland. And then I went straight into childcare, which I did for roughly 20 years. First 10 years in direct contact with children on a daily basis. And the second 10 were more a professional level up, where I was an advisor and curriculum writer and developer of projects. I know I work with immigrants who had arrived in Australia. I remember an experience that reminded me of my childhood. I went into one of the hostels where an Afghani family had just arrived, and the two grandmothers had long woolen jackets, all beautifully embroidered with furry edges and so on. But their hair was plaited all the way down to behind their knees. And I remembered women from Rhodes arriving in Brisbane when I was a child with the same thing, with beautiful long skirts with embroideries, but these huge plaits went all the way down almost to their feet. And it was my first understanding, in a way, of how differently my parents' experience of growing up was from my own. And because they both belonged to communities of islanders, and they went back to the islands at the end of their marriage in 1933. They went visiting all the islands of the Dodekanese before they came to live in Australia. So, you know, in a funny kind of way, my whole education about Greek culture prepared me for multiculturalism. So when I finally stopped working with children in the nurseries on my own, and I became an advisor, I had a whole other view of the world of immigrants from most of the people I worked with. And that was a very important part of my life. It was some of the most important work I did. And from that, I went to work in Family Welfare Agency, which almost destroyed me emotionally. It was very, very tough work. So you asked the question about where I started becoming a critic. It became a kind of intellectual escape from the work I was doing. But it happened at a dinner party in our house in Brisbane. We invited a friend who was the general manager of Queensland. He just moved there. And he told me about a new radio program at lunchtime on a Sunday, a little magazine program which he was preparing. And he said, I've got enough critics for it, except he said, I cannot find a dance critic anywhere. And I said, well, it'll be difficult at this time. Of course, you know, we had a smaller population than Sydney or Melbourne. He rang me a couple of days later to thank us for the dinner party. And he said, oh, by the way, I found the critic I'm looking for. And I said, oh, really? That was quick. And he said, yeah, it's you. And I said, you've got to be kidding. I said, as a member of the Queensland Ballet, it's very difficult for me to write about them. And he said, how long ago did you retire from there? I said, oh, 10 years ago. And he said, no, 10 years is a long time. You can write anything you like. So that's how I began.
Mm-hmm.
And continued the same time kind of program. I was offered a position as a dance critic in Melbourne with Mary Lou Gelbart on Radio National. And from there, I worked with Julie Copeland, who originated the Europeans program on Radio National. And I worked with Julie for 12 or 15 years as well as Mary Lou. Then I started doing radio programs also with Classic FM and making feature programs. And from that was the second part. The first part I got was actually to write. After the radio stuff in Brisbane, I was invited to write. So I wrote for the only dance magazine at the time, Dance Australia, which is now nearly 45, 50 years old. And I became a regular there. And then when ABC Arts went from Sunday afternoons, we used to have 2.5 hours or so of arts programs on the ABC. They started doing nighttime shows on Monday, and I was a regular guest there and sometimes interviewed in the house here in Melbourne. So I've worked across a lot of different formats, academic papers, but also wrote for the Australian arts pages for 12 years, invited by Deborah Jones, who was a terrific editor to work with. I really loved working with Deborah. She was fantastic. So it's a long time. It's been 40 years.
You had a varied career, but you spent quite a lot of time in radio as well.
Yeah. Yes, I enjoyed radio. I liked radio programs. Radio was my first love, I think, because long before television, we listened regularly to programs. There used to be American recordings of live plays, which would be broadcast on various stations, some of the commercial stations, in fact. So it was one of the rituals in our house. Whenever the Broadway shows were being broadcast on radio, we would have an early dinner and we'd all sit in the living room and listen. And of course, we listened to lots of music. And because we all played the piano in our house, we all listened to classical music as well as popular music, and we loved musical comedy.
So
there's a whole sense for us that music was everywhere, if you like.
Are you still a dance critic?
Yes, I'm not reviewing at the moment. I'm tending to do more book reviews and stuff because I'm preparing my own writing. I've got various projects I do. But I'm also a judge of the National Dance Awards. I'm on the panel for that. So part of my project, my program for myself for the year is to see as much of the ballet and contemporary dance that's performed in Melbourne, sometimes elsewhere. And if I go overseas often, I will submit reviews from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But I must admit I'm not missing reviewing performances because, you know, you've got to turn it all around overnight and sometimes it's hard to do that. And I also got very, very frustrated when newspapers started reducing the amount of space. I remember at one stage I was asked to write 50-word reviews for the Australian. I thought, no way, I'm not going to do that. That's impossible. But I do enjoy writing about books, and so that's where I'm working at the moment.
So are you a book reviewer as well as a dance critic?
Mostly, just dance books, mostly.
Ah, okay.
Mostly autobiographies or histories about people. And, my last review was of Christian Fredrickson, who was a very famous designer in the theatre, ballet and movie and television world, right across the very broad spectrum. So I was asked to review a huge publication, beautiful publication of his work. And that was, a couple of weeks serious work, and I enjoyed all of that very much. And, I'm 73 now, so I don't really need to go rushing out every night that there's a new dance show.
Tell me something. As a dance critic, what do you do when you need to review a performance you didn't like?
Tell the truth.
Okay. How do you do that?
One of the things I worked out very, very early on, and it was because I had been a dancer myself, was never blame the dancers for the choreography. Don't blame the conductor for the music, because the conductor didn't write the music. Look at the creative artists involved and look at their agenda. Look at the program note and see what they're trying to convey. And if they succeed, then you write a good review. If they don't succeed, then you pick it apart, you try to analyze. But I learned also pretty quickly, again because I was a dancer, to praise the performers of the work even if I don't like it, to give people credit for their achievement, even the failure of the author of the work, to congratulate them for taking a risk, or simply say, well, this is a terrific idea, but it really didn't go anywhere, and this is the following reasons I would put up to explain my point of view. I became a bit more generous as I got older, and I think because, A, you're competing with other critics to have your opinion accepted or understood, but I learnt not to hurt people if I didn't have to. And I think that's a very important lesson that I had to learn.
You said before that it took you a lot of time to work out what you wanted to do. How important it is that people find that as early as possible and follow that. What advice would you give to the youngsters about that?
I think what I would say to them is have a go, work hard, read a lot, learn a lot, and don't just go to ballet class and do the exercises and treat it as athletics, as some people do, because a lot of children cross between athletics or acrobatic studies with dancing. But tell them that you don't have to become a principal dancer, you don't have to become a ballerina, you don't have to be a danseur noble or anything like that. You can still be in the corps de ballet and contribute to the life of a work. You can have a terrific career. And your own talent will find a niche. And if you don't like that niche, then you have to decide what else you want to do instead. So there are different stages of development, I think, of the maturity of the student are very important. I think you encourage a lot when they're very young. As they get into their mid-teens, you start to talk about seriousness and you get to talk about what's required in a career. And certainly by the time they're 16, they have to know what the business is. And they tend to do that by going to shows and talking to older dancers and talking to their teachers so that they have the opportunity. See, singing is a very different story because our voices really don't develop so early. And our voices last longer than the ballet dancer's career. So, a lot of singers don't make their mark until they're in their late 20s.
Mm.
Whereas, in your late 20s, you should be at the peak of your ballet career.
Let's come to today, because we've been living in unprecedented times. Global pandemic, the art sector around the world has taken a really big hit.
But indeed.
So how do you see, how do you evaluate, how do you assess this current situation? And what do you say to young people who are actually studying dancing and singing and theatre and acting, and they're in the performing arts, but, you know, they probably can't even go to uni or to their schools to study?
Well, firstly, I think there are the two parts of the story. One is the politics of it, and the other is the cultural environment itself. I think Australians still find it difficult. Lots of Australians still find it difficult to accept the arts as if socially and culturally and intellectually as important as football or tennis or swimming or commercial television or commercial movies. For some reason, the dance in itself has to work extremely hard, much, much harder than the movies or even books, to build an audience and hold on to that audience. And governments generally in Australia have not been particularly generous. And I think we have a Philistine government at present, which has treated the arts absolutely abominably, as if we didn't exist, and yet kept on funding through grants and projects money to mining companies and to people like Harvey Norman and other business people through JobKeeper programs from which they've made a profit. And yet they are responsible professionally as politicians to support the arts, and they chose not to until they were forced to, and then it was mediocrity. Very large, in my opinion. So from that point of view, we are not in what I would call the most sophisticated country in the world, which we'd like to think we are. And we have a great deal more to learn about the performing arts in particular, because they are expensive to make and they are ephemeral. They're not kept on the videotape like a movie, which you can sell on and sell on over and over and make money on royalties. Same goes for opera, the same goes for theatre and drama. So from that point of view, I think we have a political problem which we have to intercept somehow or other, and I don't imagine it would ever happen under Conservative governments in this country. Labour's not particularly better either. The other one is what the public opinions are about. And every time we get dance and music into primary schools and secondary schools, it's terrific because that's where we build our new audiences. And we also broaden the perspective of children and their understanding of what's available to them if they go looking for it. But we've also had governments which will turn around and just cut those programs. So it's not a consistent commitment. Whereas somewhere like Finland, every child can read, every child gets can read music, every child learns to sing properly. Every child gets a musical instrument as a matter of course. The society sings all the time. Singing is a ritual in their social life. And it used to be for us as Greek children. I don't know how much that's the case in the Greek community, the wider Greek community anymore. Largely, I can't comment about that because I really don't have a Greek community anymore. I have a few cousins I see from time to time, but I don't belong to a Greek association of any kind. But I know in my childhood, we had a lot of music, which I knew a lot of our Anglo friends did not have. So how do we change this? I have no idea, but I do think there are important aspects of our future society where some of these old traditions of collective singing become more and more important. It's not good enough just to have the Gondwanaland children's choir and that sort of thing. We need to have this as a universal experience because it helps our lives.
So would you say that your Greek background, your Greek, you know, singing and dancing was a launching pad?
Very much
to cultivate so. To cultivate your love for art, specifically dancing and singing?
Yeah. Very much. You know, when I was in the ballet company, even though I'd done ballet classes and everything, on Sunday nights at the local Ahepa Hall, there were always different bands playing on Sunday nights from about 7 o'clock till 10. And we would all go, all my friends in the neighbourhood and friends of relatives and so on. We would just wear our snazzy new clothes that we would buy every summer or every winter, and we'd go down there and we'd buy a jug of beer and a bag of chips, and we'd dance, and we'd dance everything from, you know, rock and roll to Kalamatiano, or anything you wanted to do. And there was always a Greek band, and there was always a sense of good social atmosphere where we, as young adults, you know, we were between, say, 16 and 30, could be together without our parents. And, of course, we went to huge balls and we went to big dances with our parents as well. So I cannot, I have to tell you, my father didn't dance a step. And when my mother announced to her cousins that she was going to marry him, they said, "Are you kidding? You know, it's just Takalasu." Because they wanted to say to her, "He can't dance." And one of them eventually said, "You know, Vangelitsa, he doesn't dance." And Mum said, "Who cares? I'll dance with any man who would get up on the floor." And that, and, you know, she made a scandal of herself when she came to Australia, because she would dance with every man who would dance with her, while my father sat there smoking cigars and drinking whiskey. it was a very good example for us as children to see my parents like that. You know, dancing was so important to my mother.
We can talk for hours. You have a lot to say, and I have a lot to ask, but I'm afraid we need to wrap it up here. So thank you very, very much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. And we need voices like yours, because you put things in perspective. So thank you very much, and congratulations again for the AM.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you.
Θέλετε να ακούσετε περισσότερες ιστορίες σαν και αυτήν? Ακούστε στο Apple Podcast, στο Google Podcast, στο Spotify ή οπουδήποτε ακούτε podcast.